Chapter 4. The provisions of the bill introduced into the House of Commons by Sir Andrew Agnew, and thrown out by that House on the motion for the second reading, on the 18th of May in the present year, by a majority of 32 may very fairly be taken as a test of the length to which the fanatics, of which the Honorable Baronet is the distinguished leader, are prepared to go. No test can be fairer. Because while on the one hand this measure may be supposed to exhibit all that improvement which mature reflection and long deliberation may have suggested, so on the other it may very reasonably be inferred, that if it be quite as severe in its provisions, and to the full as partial in its operation, as those which have preceded it, and experienced a similar fate, the disease under which the Honorable Baronet and his friends labor, is perfectly hopeless, and beyond the reach of cure. The proposed enactments of the bill are briefly these. All work is prohibited on the Lord's Day, under heavy penalties, increasing with every repetition of the offense. There are penalties for keeping shops open, penalties for drunkenness, penalties for keeping open houses of entertainment, penalties for being present at any public meeting or assembly, penalties for letting carriages, and penalties for hiring them, penalties for traveling in steamboats, and penalties for taking passengers, penalties on vessels commencing their voyage on Sunday, penalties on the owners of cattle who suffer them to be driven on the Lord's Day, penalties on constables who refuse to act, and penalties for resisting them when they do. In addition to these trifles, the constables are invested with arbitrary, vexatious, and most extensive powers, and all this in a bill which sets out with a hypocritical and canting declaration, that nothing is more acceptable to God than the true and sincere worship of Him according to His holy will, and that it is the bounden duty of Parliament to promote the observance of the Lord's Day, by protecting every class of society against being required to sacrifice their comfort, health, religious privileges, and conscience, for the convenience, enjoyment, or supposed advantage of any other class on the Lord's Day. The idea of making a man truly moral through the ministry of constables, and sincerely religious under the influence of penalties, is worthy of the mind which could form such a mass of monstrous absurdity as this bill is composed of. The House of Commons threw the measure out certainly, and by so doing retrieved the disgrace so far as it could be retrieved of placing among the printed papers of Parliament such an egregious specimen of legislative folly. But there was a degree of delicacy and forbearance about the debate that took place, which I cannot help thinking as unnecessary and uncalled for, as it is unusual in parliamentary discussions. If it had been the first time of Sir Andrew Agnew's attempting to palm such a measure upon the country, we might well understand, and duly appreciate, the delicate and compassionate feeling due to the supposed weakness and imbecility of the man, which prevented his proposition being exposed in its true colors, and induced this Hon. Member to bear testimony to his excellent motives, and that noble lord to regret that he could not, although he had tried to do so, adopt any portion of the bill. But when these attempts have been repeated, again and again, when Sir Andrew Agnew has renewed them session after session, and when it has become palpably evident to the whole House that his impudence of proof in every trial kens no polite and heeds no plain denial, it really becomes high time to speak of him and his legislation as they appear to deserve, without that gloss of politeness which is all very well in an ordinary case, but rather out of place, when the liberties and comforts of a whole people are at stake. In the first place, it is by no means the worst characteristic of this bill that it is a bill of blunders. It is, from beginning to end, a piece of deliberate cruelty and crafty injustice. If the rich composed the whole population of this country, not a single comfort of one single man would be affected by it. It is directed exclusively, and without the exception of a solitary instance, against the amusements and recreations of the poor. This was the bait held out by the Hon. Baronet to a body of men who cannot be supposed to have any very strong sympathies in common with the poor, because they cannot understand their sufferings or their struggles. This is the bait, which will in time prevail, unless public attention is awakened, and public feeling exerted, to prevent it. Take the very first clause, the provision that no man shall be allowed to work on Sunday that no person, upon the Lord's day, shall do, or hire, or employ any person, to do any manner of labor, or any work of his or her ordinary calling. Apostrophe What class of persons does this affect? The rich man? No. Menial servants, both male and female, are specially exempted from the operation of the bill. Menial servants are among the poor people. The bill has no regard for them. The baronet's dinner must be cooked on Sunday, the bishop's horses must be groomed, and the peer's carriage must be driven. So the menial servants are put utterly beyond the pale of grace, unless indeed they are to go to heaven through the sanctity of their masters, and possibly they might think even that rather an uncertain passport. There is a penalty for keeping open houses of entertainment. Now, suppose the bill had passed, and that half a dozen adventurous licensed victuallers, relying upon the excitement of public feeling on the subject, and the consequent difficulty of conviction, this is by no means an improbable supposition, had determined to keep their houses and gardens open, through the whole Sunday afternoon, in defiance of the law. Every act of hiring or working, every act of buying or selling, or delivering, or causing anything to be bought or sold, is specifically made a separate offense. Mark the effect. A party, a man and his wife and children, enter a tea garden, and the informer stations himself in the next box, from whence he can see and hear everything that passes. Waiter. Apostrophe says the father. Yes. Sir. Apostrophe pint of the best ale. Apostrophe yes, sir. Apostrophe away runs the waiter to the bar, and gets the ale from the landlord. Out comes the informer's notebook penalty on the father for hiring, on the waiter for delivering, and on the landlord for selling, on the Lord's day. But it does not stop here. The waiter delivers the ale, and darts off, little suspecting the penalties in store for him. Hallo, apostrophe cries the father, waiter. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, sir. Apostrophe, just get this little boy a biscuit, will you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, sir. Apostrophe, off runs the waiter again, and down goes another case of hiring, another case of delivering, and another case of selling. And so it would go on ad infinitum, the sum and substance of the matter being, that every time a man or woman cried waiter, apostrophe apostrophe on Sunday, he or she would be fined not less than 40 shillings, nor more than 100. And every time a waiter replied, yes, sir, apostrophe he and his master would be fined in the same amount, with the addition of a new sort of window duty on the landlord. To wit, a tax of 20 shillings an hour for every hour beyond the first one, during which he should have his shutters down on the Sabbath. With one exception, there are perhaps no clauses in the whole bill, so strongly illustrative of its partial operation, and the intention of its framer, as those which relate to traveling on Sunday. Penalties of 10. 20, and 30 pounds, are mercilessly imposed upon coach proprietors who shall run their coaches on the Sabbath, 1, 2, and 10 pounds upon those who hire, or let to hire, horses and carriages upon the Lord's day, but not one syllable about those who have no necessity to hire, because they have carriages and horses of their own, not one word of a penalty on liveried coachmen and footmen. The whole of the saintly venom is directed against the hired cabriolet, the humble fly, or the rumbling hackney coach, which enables a man of the poorer class to escape for a few hours from the smoke and dirt, in the midst of which he has been confined throughout the week. While the escutcheon carriage and the dashing cab may whirl their wealthy owners to Sunday feasts and private oratorios, setting constables, informers, and penalties at defiance. Again, in the description of the places of public resort which it is rendered criminal to attend on Sunday, there are no words comprising a very fashionable promenade. Public discussions, public debates, public lectures and speeches are cautiously guarded against, for it is by their means that the people become enlightened enough to deride the last efforts of bigotry and superstition. There is a stringent provision for punishing the poor man who spends an hour in a newsroom, but there is nothing to prevent the rich one from lounging away the day in the zoological gardens. There is, in four words, a mock proviso, which affects to forbid traveling with any animal on the Lord's Day. This, however, is revoked, as relates to the rich man, by a subsequent provision. We have then a penalty of not less than 50, nor more than £100, upon any person participating in the control, or having the command of any vessel which shall commence her voyage on the Lord's Day, should the wind prove favorable. The next time this bill is brought forward, which will no doubt be at an early period of the next session of Parliament, perhaps it will be better to amend this clause by declaring that from and after the passing of the Act, it shall be deemed unlawful for the wind to blow at all upon the Sabbath. It would remove a great deal of temptation from the owners and captains of vessels. The reader is now in possession of the principal enacting clauses of Sir Andrew Agnew's bill, with the exception of one, for preventing the killing or taking of fish, or other wild animals, apostrophe and the ordinary provisions which are inserted for form's sake in all acts of Parliament. I now beg his attention to the clauses of exemption. They are two in number. The first exempts menial servants from any rest, and all poor men from any recreation. Outlaws a milkman after 9 o'clock in the morning, and makes eating houses lawful for only 2 hours in the afternoon. Permits a medical man to use his carriage on Sunday, and declares that a clergyman may either use his own, or hire one. The second is artful, cunning, and designing, shielding the rich man from the possibility of being entrapped, and affecting at the same time to have a tender and scrupulous regard for the interests of the whole community. It declares that nothing in this act contained shall extend to works of piety, charity, or necessity. Apostrophe, what is meant by the word necessity in this clause? Simply this, that the rich man shall be at liberty to make use of all the splendid luxuries he has collected around him on any day in the week, because habit and custom have rendered them necessary to his easy existence, but that the poor man who saves his money to provide some little pleasure for himself and family at lengthened intervals shall not be permitted to enjoy it. It is not necessary to him. Heaven knows, he very often goes long enough without it. This is the plain English of the clause. The carriage and pair of horses, the coachman, the footman, the helper, and the groom, are necessary on Sundays, as on other days, to the bishop and the nobleman. But the hackney coach, the hired gig, or the tax cart, cannot possibly be necessary to the working man on Sunday, for he has it not at other times. The sumptuous dinner and the rich wines are necessaries to a great man in his own mansion. But the pint of beer and the plate of meat degrade the national character in an eating house. Such is the bill for promoting the true and sincere worship of God according to his holy will, and for protecting every class of society against being required to sacrifice their health and comfort on the Sabbath. Instances in which its operation would be as unjust as it would be absurd might be multiplied to an endless amount, but it is sufficient to place its leading provisions before the reader. In doing so, I have purposely abstained from drawing upon the imagination for possible cases. The provisions to which I have referred stand in so many words upon the bill as printed by order of the House of Commons, and they can neither be disowned nor explained away. Let us suppose such a bill as this to have actually passed both branches of the legislature, to have received the royal assent, and to have come into operation. Imagine its effect in a great city like London. Sunday comes, and brings with it a day of general gloom and austerity. The man who has been toiling hard all the week has been looking towards the Sabbath, not as to a day of rest from labor and healthy recreation, but as one of grievous tyranny and grinding oppression. The day which his Maker intended as a blessing, man has converted into a curse. Instead of being hailed by him as his period of relaxation, he finds it remarkable only as depriving him of every comfort and enjoyment. He has many children about him, all sent into the world at an early age, to struggle for a livelihood. One is kept in a warehouse all day, with an interval of rest too short to enable him to reach home. Another walks 4 or 5 miles to his employment at the docks. A third earns a few shillings weekly, as an errand boy, or office messenger. And the employment of the man himself detains him at some distance from his home from morning till night. Sunday is the only day on which they could all meet together and enjoy a homely meal in social comfort. And now they sit down to a cold and cheerless dinner. The pious guardians of the man's salvation having, in their regard for the welfare of his precious soul, shut up the baker's shops. The fire blazes high in the kitchen chimney of these well-fed hypocrites, and the rich steams of the savory dinner scent the air. What care they to be told that this class of men have neither a place to cook in nor means to bear the expense, if they had? Look into your church's diminished congregations and scanty attendance. People have grown sullen and obstinate, and are becoming disgusted with the faith which condemns them to such a day as this, once in every 7. And as you cannot make people religious by act of parliament, or force them to church by constables, they display their feeling by staying away. Turn into the streets, and mark the rigid gloom that reigns over everything around. The roads are empty, the fields are deserted, the houses of entertainment are closed. Groups of filthy and discontented-looking men are idling about at the street corners, or sleeping in the sun. But there are no decently dressed people of the poorer class, passing to and fro. Where should they walk to? It would take them an hour, at least, to get into the fields, and when they reached them, they could procure neither bite nor sup, without the informer and the penalty. Now and then, a carriage rolls smoothly on, or a well-mounted horseman, followed by a liveried attendant, canters by. But with these exceptions, all is as melancholy and quiet as if a pestilence had fallen on the city. Bend your steps through the narrow and thickly inhabited streets, and observe the sallow faces of the men and women who are lounging at the doors or lolling from the windows. Regard well the closeness of these crowded rooms and the noisome exhalations that rise from the drains and kennels, and then laud the triumph of religion and morality, which condemns people to drag their lives out in such stews as these, and makes it criminal for them to eat or drink in the fresh air or under the clear sky. Here and there, from some half-opened window, the loud shout of drunken revelry strikes upon the ear, and the noise of oaths and quarreling, the effect of the close and heated atmosphere, is heard on all sides. See how the men all rush to join the crowd that are making their way down the street, and how loud the execrations of the mob become as they draw nearer. They have assembled round a little knot of constables, who have seized the stock in trade, heinously exposed on Sunday, of some miserable walking stick seller, who follows clamoring for his property. The dispute grows warmer and fiercer, until at last some of the more furious among the crowd rush forward to restore the goods to their owner. A general conflict takes place. The sticks of the constables are exercised in all directions. Fresh assistance is procured, and half a dozen of the assailants are conveyed to the station house, struggling, bleeding, and cursing. The case is taken to the police office on the following morning, and after a frightful amount of perjury on both sides, the men are sent to prison for resisting the officers, their families to the workhouse, to keep them from starving. And there they both remain for a month afterwards, glorious trophies of the sanctified enforcement of the Christian Sabbath. add to such. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.